relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Is it fair to say, would you use the word surrender when it comes to Biden and the Taliban? Is that what he's doing in Afghanistan today?
A total and complete surrender. I've never seen anything like it. For no reason. We had it so powerful, they wouldn't have done anything until we were gone.
That was the 45th President of the United States here on America First last week, calling what is happening in Afghanistan an utter surrender. All U.S. troops have left as of yesterday. However, as I've been reporting all through the show, there are at least 82 Americans trapped there. A friend of mine trying to get them out there with the State Department refusing to assist. And now the incumbent in the White House giving a speech moments ago, blaming everyone except himself for the situation and closing his speech with these words: it was the right decision. It was the best decision. Let's go to a presidential historian, financier, and a great supporter of America First. He's the author of Donald J. Trump, A President Like No Other, co-host with Victor Davis Hanson and Bill Bennett of the Scholars and Sense podcast, Lord Conrad Black. Welcome back to America First.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. Always a pleasure.
Lord Black, the best decision, the right decision?
You can argue that it was the right decision to leave, although I don't agree that it was, because as the former president, whom you just took an excerpt from, had arranged and mentioned, the Americans were sustaining no casualties. Taliban's been kept out of the cities, and Afghanistan as a whole was prevented from becoming a breeding ground of terrorists. And the stasis that had been arrived at was, I think, a better condition than removing everyone. But the best decision in the sense of the execution of it, no, it was been an absolute disaster. I mean, a moron knows that if you're evacuating a place, you get the vulnerable people, the more difficult ones to get. It's like an airplane. When it lands, they let the ladies with baby carriages and men on crutches and that sort of thing, they get them out first. And not that anyone's under any pressure then. But, you know, you get the vulnerable people out, and then the military, you know, condensed down to their departure points and cover everyone's departure and then leave. But there was no need for it. And to leave $85 billion of hardware, to go without consulting your allies, who were providing three-quarters of the troops, by the way. By the end of it, as you know, there were 7,500 yes. NATO allies to 2,500 Americans. I mean, it all came as a startling shock to them. That's no way to run an alliance, the most successful alliance in the history of the world, NATO. I mean, every conceivable diplomatic and military error was made. They've stranded an unknown number. They admit to some hundreds, but it may be more than that, of Americans there, despite pledges to the contrary. They've stranded thousands of Afghans whose lives are forfeit in these circumstances, having admitted helter-skelter thousands of others without any knowledge of whether they'd actually contributed to help the Americans or not. Now, they're probably good people. If they have the initiative to leave, then apart from the out-and-out terrorists, they're probably in addition to the countries that they fetch up in. But that's not how you conduct an evacuation. I mean, even under the pressure of the German army in 1940, the British and French managed an orderly evacuation. The French defenders, who were destined to stay anyway, and the Royal Navy and Royal Air Force conducted a magnificent covering operation while 17 divisions, 340,000 men, 240 English and 100,000 French, were evacuated. And they were fighting the Wehrmacht,
yeah.
Not a ragtag of goat herd terrorists, which is what we have in power in Afghanistan now. No, it's been a disaster, a terrible disaster, and a totally unnecessary humiliation of the United States. If they had said, we're going to leave under this program and you know, done it in sequence, as has been described, not only by me, but almost every commentator, including you, of how you conduct an evacuation, and then announced they'd gone, that would not have been humiliating. People could question the decision, but it wouldn't have been an embarrassment to the country or something that caused, for the first time in history, the President of the United States to be referred to as a shameful character in the British Parliament, yes, as he was, to general agreement, all parties, left to right. I'm always respectful of the presidency of the U.S. and as much as I can be of the holder of that office, but how President Biden can stand there and angrily announce that it was the best decision and the right decision, in embracing not just the decision, but the unutterably fatuous and disastrous way it was conducted. I just don't understand that.
Let's look at the timeline over the last 10 days and the art of strategic communications from the administration, or the lack thereof, Lord Black. For the first week, it was either absent without leave, having to fly back from Camp David, giving stuttering press conferences that weren't conferences because he refused to take any questions. Then he got back in the saddle, at least half in the saddle, was at an event where a reporter wanted to ask him about Afghanistan, and he says, no, I'm not answering questions about Afghanistan. So it was either defensive or doddering. And then today, that switch was flicked, and it was aggressive. It was staring into the camera and very combative. As a man who's built media empires on both sides of the Atlantic, in the Antipodes as well, I'd like to ask your prognosis. We've seen a little turning of the worm, if you will, the odd member of the press corps asking a tough question. What happens next? He's turned on the aggressive. Will that placate? Will that shut down the White House press corps, the legacy corps? Or is the honeymoon finally ending, Lord Black?
I believe it is ending with half of the cheering section. I think half of the cheering section has defected and fled, President Biden's description of the Afghan army. I've actually taken it upon myself over the 10 days that you mentioned to look at CNN and MSNBC, and I find that CNN has essentially fled. They're not going down to the ship. They bring on guests who severely criticize the administration, and some of their own commentators have done so as well. Now they're not as hard hitting as Fox, but they're clearly giving the impression that this has been a shambles. MSNBC is going down the ship, and in a sense, one salutes their courage, misplaced though it is, as they sink beneath the waves. I mean, Lawrence O'Donnell aggressively saying that this was a courageous decision. I mean, he's referring to the decision to abandon thousands of people utterly committed to and safety guaranteed by the United States, as well as at least hundreds of Americans. He is commending the courage of leaving $85 billion of sophisticated military equipment in the hands of America's enemies. He is commending the courage of scuttling out on the Allies, the British, the French, the Germans, all of them, with substantial forces engaged in Afghanistan and just running for the exit without even a word over his shoulder that's what he's doing, as if that's how you run an alliance. It isn't courage, of course. It's absolute incompetence and cowardice. But they are going to call it courage. And in my opinion, there is no question. The American public recognizes in varying degrees that even if it was correct to leave Afghanistan. The way it was done was a disaster. Now, in my opinion, the final fallacy that is going to emerge very soon already has, in some respects, considering the terrible business a few days ago where 13 American servicemen were killed and women, is this theory, we've left, the war is over. Well, of course, the war isn't over.
No.
The war against terrorism and what's going on is going to be the amplification of terrorist activity generated from Afghanistan. It's rubbish from A to Z.
Lord Black, you there?
I'm here.
Oh, yes, right. And the idea in his speech today, and I touched upon this earlier, he said it's time to focus on the domestic national security threat, as if the September 11th threat, as if the ISIS threat was something that was outside of our borders, that couldn't move, that couldn't exploit the age of the jetliner and the internet. We're talking to Lord Conrad Black. He is the co-host of the podcast Scholars in Sense, author of A President Like No Other, Donald J. Trump and the Restoring of America, amongst many, many other books we will be discussing, especially my favorite at the moment, A Matter of Principle, his autobiography. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network. Stay with us.
Portions of America First are brought to you by Food for the Poor.
First, let me say I was shocked that the president released a paper statement on the end of the Afghan war. He says he's going to speak to the nation tomorrow, but a paper statement, I find that very strange. I thought that the Secretary of State's statement, which was videotaped and he was looking slightly off camera, I mean, it looked like a hostage video. It was not the kind of production values that you would expect for such a moment in time.
National security correspondent Jennifer Griffin, Fox News, calling the chief diplomat of America, Antony Blinken, looking like somebody in a hostage video. And of course, that announcement yesterday, that a surreal announcement that the war in Afghanistan is over simply because we left the battlefield, being announced in a paper statement. I have to give you breaking news. Amazing, amazing. Just sent to me from Jenna Ellis, President Trump's former attorney. A settlement has been arrived at. Pastor MacArthur of Grace Community Church has won in California. Their First Amendment rights have been secured, and they have won $800,000 from the state of California to keep their churches open. God bless Jenna Ellis and Pastor John MacArthur. A small but significant victory for the First Amendment. We are back with Lord Conrad Black. He is the author of several presidential biographies. You need to read them. That's why I'm going to ask the next question. Having written about Nixon, who had to leave office, having written about my former boss, President Trump, who was impeached twice, at what point does an incumbent become truly vulnerable? Because at the moment, it seems as if you talked about the legacy media counting its future, who to put its money on. But the Democrats are tight. Nobody is breaking rank in the Democrats. And Nancy Pelosi called the decision to leave Kabul. She said she's proud of Biden's decision to do so. So is there a magic formula at which point a president's position is indefensible?
There is, and he certainly is nowhere near it at the moment. But you're right, of course, that the Democrats haven't broken ranks the way the Republicans did with Nixon, but they aren't saying anything. And
no.
Pelosi made those remarks that you quoted early on.
Correct.
And she's been relatively quiet by her standards since then. But the great caucus of the Democratic senators and congressmen and their leading governors have not said anything. They haven't criticized the president, but they're not rushing to the television camera supporting him either. And they're kind of sitting on the fence. And when your own party's sitting on the fence, you know that things are wobbly. But I think it would be hard and as a constitutional matter, probably almost impossible to successfully impeach a president in his role as commander-in-chief for botching a military operation. That isn't a crime. We are entitled to make mistakes. It was a terrible mistake, but the Constitution of the United States does not identify an honest mistake as a reason to impeach somebody.
What about leaving $83 billion worth of armaments for our enemies? Could that be an impeachable offense?
It's negligence, but I think you'd have a problem calling it a crime, and especially once he started in claiming that he was following the advice of the generals. I think we'll get ultimately a number of people walking the plank here, both in uniform and out, and then the president will essentially use them as scapegoats. I mean, he says the buck stops here, but take a line from Greg Gutfeld that I got last night. I'm not going to do this right. It was something like the buck stops there in the same way it does in a sex party of deers, meaning the buck gets all around. And I just thought it was a funny line, even if I can't quote it properly. But as you said at the outset, he accepts responsibility and then blames everyone else.
Yes.
But I think where we could get more problems is obviously if there were indictments in the Hunter Biden thing, then I think you might be getting into an area where the party elders, the parties in the Democratic Party, could say to him, you'd better go. If you go, it'll be fine. No one will bother you. You claim that your health is breaking down, and bless you and goodbye. Something like that might happen if things continue to break badly for him in different areas.
I thank you for raising, thank you for raising the topic of Hunter Biden. I wanted to inform our millions of listeners, our Facebook channel, both the show one and my personal one, have been restricted. We are banned from advertising. We are banned from live streaming the show if you are looking for it there today. Why? Because in June, we posted a story about Hunter Biden. That is why. That is why Facebook has restricted us, because we dared to post a story with the photographs from the ominous laptops, in case you are wondering what's going on Facebook. Lord Black, co-host of Scholars and Sense, follow him right now. Lord Black, talk to us about the perspective of turning an administration or a nation's renommé around. We mustn't lose hope, because after Carter, Iran, OPEC, we had the turnaround of President Reagan after Obama, likewise with Donald Trump. So now is not the time to say that dark days ahead for America forever, correct?
Absolutely. It is fundamentally a very strong country. But what you have now, as I see it, is, and you tell me that you disagree with it, but the Democrats are at the moment essentially a coalition, a very uneasy, informal coalition of outright socialists trying to make an across-the-board lurch to the left, of people, both African-Americans and white Americans, who are for some reason motivated to a fury of self-punishment for the original sin of
country and protect. We lost you there for a second. The original sin of what, Lord Black?
Slavery. Now, President Lincoln's the Civil War was the punishment for that. But it's this group, Black and White, trying to...
Lost him there. Yes, it is a very, very strange concatenation, an alliance of very disparate groups, including radicals and self-haters, which means what? It's not very stable. And as such, something like the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, the surrender of all that equipment, and the strengthening of our enemies could be the catalyst that creates some fatal divisions amongst that current alliance. We're talking to Lord Conrad Black. His books are A President Like No Other, Donald J. Trump and the Restoring of America, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Champion of Freedom, and his autobiography, A Matter of Principle. And of course, he has a fabulous podcast with Victor Davis Hanson and Bill Bennett, Scholars and Sense. This is America First. Next, latest updates on jihadis, Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, and what it means for you. We're going to go to your calls momentarily. Jim, Phil, Claudia, don't go anywhere. But as soon as I saw the articles coming off his feed from his media empire, I said, I hope John's on the show today. And sure enough, he was. It's justthenews.com. You've got to bookmark them. You've got to follow this guy. Jay Solomon reports. We'll talk about those stories in a second. But first, from a communication standpoint, let's begin here. Has the worm turned? Is the White House press corps finally going to break that honeymoon with the man whose ice cream flavors have been their topic for so long?
Yeah, I do think so. I think, listen, at the end of the day, they hear the American people, and the American people have seen nothing but a disaster in Afghanistan, nothing but a disaster at the border, nothing but a disaster with inflation. They're starting to feel the impact of the Biden agenda, and that resonates down. If you're trying to sell stories and information, and you're not covering what the American people are most concerned about, you start to lose audience. And so I think this is driven by the fact that the American people first are frustrated by Joe Biden's performance. You see it in the polling and other places. And now the media are realizing they have an obligation to go cover this. And they're starting, it's a volcano overrunning, but they're starting to ask the hard questions that they should have been asking months ago.
We just had Ari Fleischer on, who is, you know, the man at the podium for the Bush administration. Sure. And he said, when I asked him, you can't recover from the last week in terms of communication. There's no way to undo the I'm not taking questions, turning your back on the podium. How much damage has this done, do you think, in terms of the strategic communications brand of this White House?
Presidential politics is always visceral, right? And so we have a personal connection to the president that we don't have to our other politicians. When you see Joe Biden's head down on the podium, when you see him checking his watch during the funeral of the 13 or during the military procession for the 13 soldiers that died on his watch, when you see him say just 2 weeks ago, no one's going to be hanging on planes, it's going to be an orderly transition, then people start hanging on planes because it got disorderly and chaotic. Those images are seared in the back of people's consciousness, and they're not going to be easily erased. They're going to be there for a long time. These are issues of competence and performance, and they will not be rejected or forgotten easily.
Remember, when I went to Harvard, they still gave lectures on the 5 o'clock shadow on Nixon's face.
That's right.
During the debate with JFK that made him look old and worn out and made JFK look vibrant. They're talking about 5 o'clock shadows. That's still a topic in strategic communications. We're talking to John Solomon, justthenews.com, Jay Solomon reports. And by the way, I hated Harvard, okay? I didn't drop that there. I just wanted to tell you where I heard it. I detested it, and I got out of there as fast as I could. John, let's talk about the story that made me go, I hope John's coming on the show today. The FBI is supposed to keep things secret, but not everything. Is that right?
Yeah, listen, we've heard time and again, ever since the spring of 2017, when we began unraveling the Russia collusion narrative and the misconduct that the FBI engaged in, there were two things we always told. You have to be honest about your confidential informants, and you have to tell the court the negative things that don't support your thing. You can't omit exculpatory information is the fancy word. Well, time and again, we saw that in Russia. Then after the Russia case, the inspector general came out and said, it's happening in cases all over. There are search warrants and FISA warrants unrelated to Trump where information has been hidden from the courts. And they're not managing confidential informants who have bad backgrounds. They're not disclosing that when they're required under the law. Chris Wray came around and said, listen, I got a handle on this. We're fixing it. Well, here, a brand new case in Washington State involving a white supremacist named Caleb Brown, I think his name is. He is accused of targeting Jews and minorities with hateful retribution. So he's not a likable guy. But here they had an informant who was posing as a white supremacist publisher for 16 years, paid $144,000 by the FBI. The FBI never told the court approving the search warrant about his relationship and the money, and they didn't tell him that he had a prior felony conviction, something that goes to the credibility of that informant.
Will there be any consequences to this story of FBI malfeasance again, or is this just something that rare outlets like yourself are shining a light on? What's your experience? What's your expectation as somebody who's been an investigative journalist for so long, John?
Well, listen, the judge that has this case is a guy with a reputation for being a stickler, that you come into my courtroom, you act appropriately, you don't mess around. He's given speeches about it. There's a pending motion before him to withhold or to strike down some of the evidence against this defendant because of the FBI's conduct. And the Justice Department has come in and said, yeah, no, we did it, but we don't think it's a fatal mistake. We're sorry, we did it. That doesn't give me much hope that the Justice Department will discipline the FBI agents or the lawyers who processed the search warrant affidavit. But the real consequence could come in the case where the government, who's trying to prosecute someone who's allegedly a bad guy, may lose some of the evidence if the judge rules in that direction.
I have to ask you every time you come on, because you've been the person telling the truth about the Russia collusion hoax since the get-go. Any news, anything you're hearing on the wire about Durham? Is the report coming? Is the grand jury doing anything? What is John hearing?
There are people that have read sections of the draft report, so there are parts of the report that are now in a format where people can read it and back read it for accuracy and fairness and things like that. And then there is some activity before the grand jury still in this last few weeks indicating that he may be pursuing criminal charges against a small number of FBI or DOJ officials. I believe they're looking at some of the agents that were involved in the FISA warrants and also providing information to Congress. And then there's some interesting things, like some things going on with the Clinton Foundation and connections to the dossier. We'll see where all that leads. But John Durham has run a very active investigation. This is not a head fake. There is a very detailed investigation. And I think they're certainly acting as though there may be some additional criminal charges.
And the paucity, the lack of leaks is fascinating. Follow this man. Go to justthenews.com. Your call's next here on America First.
I know Sebastian well. Listen to him. He's with us.
Thank you, Mr. President. There is a manhunt underway as we speak in North Carolina. There has been a shooting at a high school. One student has been shot. It's Mount Tabor High School in Winston-Salem. One student injured, according to the latest reports. All other students are safe, according to the Winston-Salem Police Department. However, the gun person is still at large. So there is a manhunt underway. We will keep you apprised of any developments out of North Carolina. It's time for our national economic update from the market maven who tells us everything we need to know that the lying legacy media doesn't want to tell you about. You've got to listen to her podcast, the Trish Regan podcast. Trish, welcome back to America First.
Thank you so much, Seb.
We were talking in the break, and it's something that kind of I was going to tweet about and maybe talk about it on the show, but you kind of preempted me that, you know, whether it's the mask mandates, whether it is the mandatory vaccinations for federal employees, or whether it's anything to do with economic policy, why should we trust a government that can so egregiously make a mistake like the pullout from Kabul?
It's a really good question. I've been really saddened by everything that I've seen happen in Afghanistan. And let me just say, you know what? You know, we all have our political biases. I get it. But I certainly did not wish him anything like this, right? You know, let's just separate for a second who we are as Americans versus, you know, sure, you know, you had the former president on the show the other day, and I understand, like, you know, a lot of people wish he was still there. I think for a lot of reasons, things might have gone differently if he was still there. But that said, I never wish a president circumstances like what we're seeing right now. So let me just say that, right? And I can't believe how badly this has gone to the point, Seb, where it really has disheartened me and leaves me with not a ton of trust for our federal government, whether it be Afghanistan and the fact that, you know what, he knew 4 weeks earlier that it could be a pretty precarious situation. We've now learned, given the excerpts from the call with the president from Afghanistan, he and Biden had discussed this, and Biden wanted him to put on, you know, a happy face, basically, regardless of whether that was the truth or not. So there's that. There's the casualties there that are just so inexcusable. There's what's happened down in Louisiana, and you know what's coming. I mean, don't forget, and I'm not, you know, giving Republicans a pass on this. Don't forget Bush and the disastrous time that we had. I spent 6 weeks on the ground in the aftermath of Katrina, and I had families crying to me that they couldn't get a darn trailer, and yet thousands of trailers.
Yes, I remember.
Video of them. They were lined up, you know, and so I'm fearful that we're going to have a repeat of that. And then I look at our Federal Reserve that just keeps printing money recklessly, and it really leaves you, I think, with a void of trust, just a sense that, you know, they can't get it right. Maybe our government has just gotten too darn big, trying to do too darn much, and none of it is good for us as Americans.
So let me wax philosophical with you for 1 second. Listening to you makes me just ask a question, and forgive me if I'm being naive. Could all of this, could COVID, Afghanistan, the border, could we finally return to a place where, you know, in their not intellectual fashion, but in their gut reaction, Americans lean away from interventionism, where it's more, you know, Hayek and von Mises, and it's less big government. Could the experience of the last 2 years finally shake people a little to understand that no, government isn't the answer? Is that possible, Trish Regan?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I hope so. I think that this has been a giant wake-up call. And this, again, let me just point out, it's not even partisan. And when you look at the polling data, what you see is that many people, independents, are just disgusted by what happened. And many in the Democrat Party are likewise disgusted. I mean, this was uncalled for in Afghanistan. But when you think about, you know, the trust that we have put in government, I think people are starting to say, wait a second, you know what, maybe this isn't right. Maybe we need to be a little bit more focused, a little more inward. You mentioned the border wall, our border, protecting ourselves. I mean, you know, heck, I'm thinking to myself, this U.S. dollar is in bad shape, given all the money printing that's been going on. Who else around the world is getting it right? What is Switzerland doing, for example, that we're not?
Right.
Switzerland and the Swiss franc, not just the central banking policy, but even just the policies that they've adopted as a country. And you want to talk about a border. I mean, like, you know, they're very, very serious about their border. It's actually a crime to even unintentionally help anyone to illegally cross that border or to stay illegally in the country. I mean, they take these things very seriously. And I just think everything from, you think about our semiconductor industry, we are dependent on Taiwan, which therefore means, you know, we have to have this, you know, military relationship and protect Taiwan because we can't do it ourselves. I mean, right. I just think this is the opportunity. It really is an America First agenda, and nobody should see that as overly, I get that it's political, but come on. It's frankly common sense. Put you, yourself, your family, your loved ones, your country first.
Follow this lady, Trish_Regan, on Twitter, trishintel.com, and listen to her podcast on the Salem Network. That's the Trish Regan Show. In the last 2 minutes we've got left, you talk about common sense. I'm not sure much of that applies to the Fed. What do you think is going to happen in the near future to interest rates, to the Fed, to the stock market? Are you still jittery? What's your prognostication?
I think the market loves this because, you know, they're printing money and it's an inflationary thing. And so, of course, it takes more dollars to buy any stock that you want, right? So you can probably still anticipate that's going up. But here's some warning signs for you. And just think about it, okay? So housing prices, this week we learned, hit an all-time record high.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? In the 1970s, 1973, housing prices also hit an all-time record high. Between 73 and 74, you saw a 45% drop in the market. Then again in the 1980s, ahead of the 87 crash, once again, housing prices hit an all-time high. Fast forward to 2007 into 2008, before that massive credit crisis, what do you have going on? Housing prices at an all-time high. Now you look at what's going on now. What sometimes the Fed inadvertently does is by having a very aggressive monetary policy, they create other kinds of bubbles that have financial effects. And, you know, who's to say it's not happening again? We are now, again, seeing an all-time high in housing prices. So watch out. I do think, you know, I say that with a grain of salt only because I think that this market will get to lay at least another few months. I wouldn't sell everything just yet. I would stay diversified. I'd look at things like gold. I'd look at things like REITs. I'd look at things like, you know, other currencies that might help you shield your depressing U.S. dollar. Because I think over the long run, we're going to have a bit of trouble.
Let's just remember history does not repeat itself, but it sure might rhyme. Follow her, the Trish, in the Trish Regan Show. This is America First.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.